Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show with space nerds Kavi and Benjamin here on iRock Space Radio. I have to admit, the helium had made my mouth is really dry now. That's why I'm hesitating breathing in any more of it, which, again, I think I need to do a little bit of research on the science of what helium, like, why does it must be because it's a lighter gas than air. That must be why it makes your voice high pitched. But like, sure. What's happening to your body when you're breathing in helium? I'm just really intrigued. I'll make that my homework for the week. Speaking of homework, that's what Kavi is going to have to run off to. He's done recording. Yeah. Mr. in grad school, and I'm going to be starting back up in a couple of weeks myself. And
lucky.
And yeah, well, and actually, I was telling Kavi before we started recording all together that I'm also going to apply for a PhD. So I really am hoping to do an academic paper, a research paper on like the history of science communication. So we actually dipped into that a little bit in that last segment because I want to think about starting it from like the point of the ancients, from like the Egyptians or the Greeks or the Romans, because even though they probably didn't call it science communication, it was communicating science.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. In their
just as Kavi said, it was somebody communicating science when they understood when the seasons were for looking for emu eggs and when it was time to let them be. And that's science communication at its, you know, at its rawest. It's one of the ones that's most important when this is helping us survive.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
The other cool example that I always think about with Aboriginal astronomy is actually something that is cross-cultural, and it's with the Pleiades, with the seven sisters.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And what's crazy to me is the fact that more or less the exact same story exists not just in Aboriginal culture, but also in Japanese culture, right? Yep. Where it's called the Subaru constellation. Same thing in ancient Greek. I mean, the fact that in multiple, like, totally separate cultures, separated both by space and time, they all had a similar story about seven young girls. And I think in some cases, it's like seven young girls running away from a hunter, which was Orion, the Orion constellation with the hunter chasing after them. But what's crazy is that I think that with the naked eye, you can only see six of the seven sisters, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And the fact that these stories, you know, were communicated in the form of there are seven stars and the seventh sister, there was, you know, some kind of story that would be made up to describe why she was missing or why she was being quiet or something like that. Like, that's an active communication of a scientific fact. The fact that there's a variable star that changes in brightness. I mean, there's no like active use of that, like the emu egg story. This is a story that communicates science.
Yeah. I love that example. And actually, is it nerdy? Yes.
Yes, short answer, yes.
I drive a Subaru Outback, and it always just, I know that that's why Subaru is Subaru, and their logo are those little stars on it, because it's because of that. And when you also...
I am today years old when I
drive. You didn't know that? Yeah.
No,
that's why,
oh my God.
That's why Subaru I am today years old. And then they actually
came up with a Subaru from now on. That's it.
That's why they name also when you turn on the car, like their electronic, I don't know, programming, if you will, is called Starlink, which they named that before Elon and Starlink. So when I turn on my car, I always see Starlink and I'm like, I don't know. It's delightfully nerdy.
That's so cool. Yeah. My next car is
having such a good day right now.
Should we not talk about the Nissan Pulsar? we won't talk about that.
What's Pulsar?
Oh gosh.
We'll do a Pulsar episode, don't worry.
I feel like if we are going to do a Pulsar episode and we're talking about science communication, that makes me think of the golden records and how a Pulsar is one of the things that is on the record to use as a directional
actually there's several Pulsars, right?
The nearest
dozen or so.
If I'm not mistaken though, if something were to find the golden record, like way out there, those pulsars might not be actually like directionally accurate anymore, from what I understood. If it went for billions of years.
Oh, billions of years, then fine. Yeah, like, once it's left the galaxy.
Yeah.
it's probably not.
I don't remember. I remember reading something about that randomly in passing. That like it might not be.
I think those accurate.
The aliens might get lost.
I think those directions might be somewhat accurate for a good long time to come.
Sure.
As far as billions of years ago, I don't think any stellar coordinates would be good. And
good because
I mean, Earth won't even be here in billions of years.
Yeah, Earth won't even be here. It wouldn't even matter.
You know, we missed out on what looks like a good time. They sent semi nudes on their on their records.
Yeah, why are these these weird ape like creatures sending us naked pictures and directions to their house?
The nudes went out on Pioneer. And for Voyager, they toned it down a little bit.
Yes.
It was just silhouettes of a
yes, the smut in space.
But if you're able to
smut in space,
if you open up the record, there's a casing, and then the record's inside. And behind the record, there's a player and all the little pieces you would need and instructions supposedly to get the information off of it, sound, the eventual images. If you can get the bitmap images that are encoded in the record. Then you'll see a few naughty bits.
So the naughty bits are hidden in a secret file. Gotcha.
But it's not in a vulgar way either. It's like a woman breastfeeding a baby, or a hunter wearing not much in the Amazon, and that kind of thing. So you will see our anatomy, but not just like, you know, standing there. Hello.
Right. Well, yeah, we have lots of ideas apparently for what is to come, what we're working on. Speaking of what we're working on and what you know, we wanted to talk a little bit about what we want to look ahead to about bringing to this new show. And one thing we really would like to do is highlight people or organizations or things that are doing good with science or for science. And I need to coordinate things with him, but I have been involved with for quite some time, and I don't know if you have Kavi? Yeah. With a friend of ours named Lee Giat, who has a really, really ambitious project that he's going to be doing, which is flying STEM supplies to up and down all of Latin America. And after many, 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 many COVID delays, he is finally going to be able to go in December. So we will definitely be looking at bringing him on and letting him talk about his cause and how you can help support, you know, this really, I mean, I do pretty extreme adventurous things. Like I scuba dive, I went to Mount Everest base camp, but what he's doing, he's flying solo. And then there will be ground support crews that are going to, you know, drive and meet him from point to point, but he's flying by himself down Latin America. And he's actually training to breathe with supplemental oxygen so that he can go up higher because his plane isn't pressurized. So he'll be a really amazing person to bring on and kind of fits our objective of what we would like to do, which is to bring people and organizations and companies on to talk about the awesome things that they're doing, the power of science for good, not sending smut into space. But for good. I'm just kidding. The records are like my favorite thing.
Did we send smut? Did we? It wasn't. I love that record.
You're right. You're right, though. Like the whole project that Lee's doing, which I think you can look it up if you look up Passage Science on social media. I mean, he's flying a plane specially designed called the Spirit of Science.
I know.
All through Latin America, Central and South America, to a bunch of different schools, and he's taking telescopes. I mean, if you could see the photos of just like a cargo bay full of telescopes and educational equipment. And he's going to go down there and speak to these kids and, you know, show them the night sky, some of them for the first time. Mm-hmm. It's really incredible. And the fact that he's doing it alone is just, wow.
Yeah, he's doing it alone. But then also he's going to have a follow-up support for the educators in those areas to like make sure that it's not just a one and done. It's an ongoing educational project that even after he's gone, he's going to have, training and supplemental kind of things sent to these teachers. And so he has like points of contact out there to make sure that this isn't just a show for him to do something. It's actually for a long-term, help expose kids to science. It's really Absolutely. Incredible. So we will be looking forward to bringing that within probably the next couple of weeks. We're also really excited, anxiously excited about the upcoming launch of SLS and Artemis 1. And you've been to some launches, right, Ben?
I have. There is plenty of room for all the people that want to come to see a launch, and there's plenty of places to watch a launch from. Of course, nothing beats being invited onto Kennedy, by NASA itself and watch from there.
Right.
But there's Cocoa Beach, which is right nearby. It's a famous beach, but it's also a monstrously big beach. And you can watch rockets. You might not be able to see the rocket on the launch pad, depending where you are on the beach, but you will hear it take off. And just
you feel it as well, right? When it launches, absolutely. You kind of like see. So the one that I was there,
first
I was
you see it go up, launch. And then all of a sudden, boom, right in your chest.
Right.
You'll feel it. And from Cocoa Beach, you will, once it passes the tree line, you'll start seeing it going up. And some of these rockets are monstrously huge, especially SLS. Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is like the biggest
one in a long time.
Yeah.
So you will definitely see it. And as it starts going up, all of a sudden, you suddenly hear it. And that rumble is I feel bad almost for people who work at NASA. They're used to it. So it's just another rocket. But for anybody who sees it for the first time, it's an insanely interesting sensation.
Yeah.
You watch this thing go up, and then, because speed of light is faster than speed of sound. And then you hear it. And the minimum safe distance is 3 miles. So you're not like very close at all, to be honest. So
right.
You're 3 miles away. So that thing's already booking by the time you hear it. And it's loud.
It's between that, we're super heavy.
SpaceX is launching its rocket, I think, in a month or so as well. Its first orbital test. And that's equally as big as SLS. So opportunities abound.
Yeah.
So the launches are great. And people like us who watch these things like other people watch sports, it's a big deal for us to watch the launches and watch the booster separation. And that's like, for us, that's that's the game.
Yep.
That's the best day. Right. But when the pictures start coming back and they start making the headlines, that's what people tune in to see more, because this is the final result. They don't care about the building of the rocket or the launching of the rocket or the travel time, whatever. It's like, show me what you got.
And
that's what gets people excited. And that's what makes
people. People talk about the Apollo effect, of how like a generation of scientists were born after seeing the Apollo missions. And I think really like the thing that caused the Apollo effect wasn't the fact that they were trying to get to the moon. It was the fact that they got to the moon, It was the fact that they achieved something that people could look at and just say, wow. Like it's just something mind blowing,
Wow.
Just wow.
Well, we're going to need to wrap it up. I'm going to go grab one more balloon. Because I went and got this helium, and it is a very precious, rare element. So let me go waste it properly.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, when you think about what's actually happening with helium, you kind of have to realize that it's not reacting to the other things that are around it, right? It's a noble gas.
Right.
So that could have something to do. Ooh, squeaky, squeaky, squeaky.
Well that helium is reacting to what's around it, because Sarah's around it.
Yes.
Just squeaky.
It was good. I'm glad that we had balloons to celebrate the 1 week birthday of the show.
The 1 week birthday of the Space Cake Sarah show.
Next time we'll have cake.
Space cake. Space cake
Sarah
show.
Space cake Sarah.
So to wrap it up, we're gonna
hold on.
As a reminder, you are please welcome to go to irockspaceradio.com and join our crew club. We have a giveaway also with this episode, which was one of the birthdays that were mentioned in the first part of the show. And if you missed it, then I guess you know what? You're going to have to listen to the next airing of this. So if you're catching it in the morning, you're going to need to catch it in the evening. And hold on.
You're going to want that shirt and hat, people.
Shirt and hat. Woo! And then we are, I'm SpaceKSarah22 on Instagram. We have Fun Fact Science here on Instagram. And Science Actually
Science on all the various social media platforms.
Okay. And I'm going to sign us out in helium.
Do it.
A helium case.
So you are listening to the Space Case Sarah Show with Kavi and Benjamin here on iRock Space Radio.
Can't wait to see what you sound like with lithium next week.